Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
6 months ago today, the Boston Marathon bombings happened. Three people died at the finish line, more than 260 were injured, and countless more will carry invisible scars forever. To mark that day and to honor the city, a new collection of stories is out today. It's called Our Boston: Writers Celebrate the City They Love.
36 writers contributed pieces, including novelist Dennis Lehane, Boston Globe columnist Kevin Cullen, and WBUR's very own Bill Littlefield. Also, George Howe Cult, who wrote a story called Getting Over Boston. George Howe Cult is a journalist and author of several books, including his recent memoir, Brothers. And he joins us from the studios of New England Public Radio in Amherst. And George, welcome back to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
George, this is such a lovely story. And before we talk about it, tell us first a little bit more about Our Boston Project and how you became involved in this.
Well, I got an email from Andrew Blonner, the editor of this project, who told me what he was trying to do, which was to gather a number of writers who either lived in Boston or cared about Boston who had been from Boston. He wanted to find some way to help, not only financially. A portion, $5 from each book sold, will go toward the Boston Victims Fund. But he wanted to get at, you know, what the spirit of Boston was and what we all loved about it so much, and what had been damaged on that day. Well, in April.
Yeah. Well, George, let's talk about your story, because I think it gets at that issue. I mean, you mentioned the spirit of this city. You do it beautifully. It's called Getting Over Boston. And you start in one place and sort of end someplace else. You write about growing up in a Boston family with Brahmin lineage and a real fear of being sucked into a tradition of cold roast Boston, stodgy, old-fashioned, suffocating. And it comes from a cautionary tale about your grandfather. Right? Tell us about him.
Yes. Well, I lived just outside of Boston in a suburb, and the Boston I came to know in my youth was my grandparents' Boston. And my grandfather had come to Boston from a town in upstate New York, and he'd gone to Harvard, and he'd compiled a sort of glittering record, and he ended up marrying the daughter of an old prominent Boston family. And after they were married about a year, my grandfather got a job with J.P. Morgan in New York, and they moved to New York for about 8 months, and my grandmother just didn't – it wasn't Boston. It was New York. It was, and she wanted to go back to Boston, and so she persuaded my grandfather to move back to Boston, where he went to work for his father-in-law and gradually sort of fell into cold roast Boston. I used to think of him as, having tried to get out of Boston. I imagined a sort of movie in my head, Escape from Boston, and my grandfather hadn't quite been able to do it. And of course, I was terrified that I wouldn't be able to escape from Boston either.
So read us just a little bit from the early on in this story. It's right in the middle of page 79 there, where you talk about sort of what happened to your grandfather's condition when he came back to Boston.
Sure. Under the well-intentioned benevolence of his in-laws and the stultifying embrace of proper Boston, my grandfather atrophied, and by his late 40s he was living off his wife's modest trust fund and spending the bulk of his time frowning over the Christian Science Monitor, placing orders for marmalade and Melba sauce with S.S. Purse, and pouring himself another two fingers of Gilby's gin. Even as a boy, tiptoeing around my grandfather, I knew the moral of the story. Beware the siren call of Brahmin Boston. I saw men like my grandfather at every family reunion, Christmas get-together, and Labor Day cocktail party. Former prep school stars from old Boston families who had ended up State Street bankers, estate lawyers, and trustees, tending their friends' money, drawing up wills, and serving on boards of directors.
Okay. Beware the siren call of Brahmin Boston. So, George, you mentioned you grew up in the suburbs. You ended up at Harvard. Tell us more about your relationship to Boston early on. What was your attitude toward the city as a young man?
Well, I wanted to do everything I could to sort of find a different Boston than my grandparents' Boston. And so I used to take the Orange Line in from Forest Hills almost every Saturday with my friends. And we'd try to find a kind of more exciting Boston. And of course, you have to remember, this was the mid-60s. And Boston was living in the past, but we found Jack's Joke Shop was our favorite place to go to. And of course, Fenway Park, which back then, before it became a kind of national shrine, was really kind of a hulking, cavernous place, particularly the concourse underneath, which, you know, reeked of beer. And it all seemed terribly exciting to me. and that continued when I went to Harvard, and I would cross the Charles and go into Boston and go to jazz joints and go to Haymarket. And I wanted to find something different than what my grandparents had found. But it must be said that as soon as I graduated from Harvard, still fearing, I think, the grip of proper Boston, I did flee to New York, where I lived for 20 years.
Right. You fled to New York, and you talk about how you embraced the excitement, the vitality, and really a contrast that it had relative to Boston. But slowly you found your soul pulled back to Boston, or at least to Massachusetts. So what happened? What did you miss? What did you come to realize that you loved after all?
Well, I felt gravity pulling me back toward Boston. And although I didn't get quite all the way back to Boston, I still kept a somewhat of a healthy distance. But what I found is I missed my past. I missed the past that Boston represented for me, and the great the shared past of our country that Boston also represents. New York was sort of like, you know, the woman that you have an affair with, albeit a 20-year affair for me. But Boston was the city, and Massachusetts, the state that I wanted to marry, that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, so to speak. That may be an inexact analogy, but there was something enduring about Boston that I wanted to get back to.
Yeah, and when you got back, you found a younger, more exciting, more diverse Boston, right? And yet you also came to appreciate some of the old sort of the old aspects of the city as well.
I did. You know, it was sort of with mixed feelings that I would come back to Boston. And by now I had children of my own, and I was introducing them to all the things that I had grown up on, and, you know, the Swan Boats and the Public Garden and Boston Common and the Freedom Trail, which of course they hated just as I had hated. Boston had changed a great deal and had become a younger, you know, snappier, hipper, more diverse city, all of which I loved. But I also found myself thinking, I also want to seek out those slower, may be the wrong word, but more tradition-bound parts of Boston that I'd rejected in my youth. Of course, I was growing older, so it wasn't unnatural that I would look for my roots.
George, I love the way you conclude the story with a great line about a guest at the White House who introduces himself to President Franklin Roosevelt. Tell us about that. So he says, "I'm from Boston." And what does the president say?
Yes, the president then says, and we don't quite know how to take this, but he says, "Well, you'll never get over it." as if it were some kind of disease, which is not quite right. But yeah. And of course, now I feel I don't want to get over it. I embrace it.
The title of the story, Getting Over Boston, the point is, you're not over it, and nor do you wish to be.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
So finally, George, this collection, as we mentioned at the top, is to honor the city 6 months after the Marathon bombings. When you look back at that day, when you think about this city, what do you think?
Well, like so many people, you know, I'm so impressed with the resilience of Boston. And I think that from the very beginning, there was never any question that Boston was going to be Boston strong. You know, when I both initially and in the days and the months following, I thought so much about, you know, the day on which it happened, Patriots Day, which of course honors the first shots at Lexington and Concord. And I thought of, you know, Boston was the city that, you know, fought back against the British and that stood up and was courageous back then. And, you know, we've seen it again and again in Boston's history. But the fact that it was on Patriots Day, you know, touched, made extra sure to tap into that resilience that so many people have remarked on in Boston.
Mm. That's George Howe Colt. He's a writer and Boston native, now living out in Western Massachusetts. His story, Getting Over Boston, is part of a new collection entitled Our Boston, Writers Celebrate the City They Love. Morning Edition's Bob Oakes will be moderating a panel of writers who contributed to the collection at the Boston Book Festival this coming Saturday. A lot more information at radioboston.org. And George Howe Colt, a real pleasure. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
Stay with us. Up next, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates hoping to become governor of Massachusetts. Today, former state and federal Homeland Security official Juliette Kayyem. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.